Hey guys, it's Payne. I'm really excited to introduce a brand new show to Bet the Board that combines sports and alternative investing, the very first of its kind. Sports betting and collectibles converging is inevitable. Let me tell you why. Sports cards and memorabilia are another way to get money into the market and do it without limit restrictions or the substantial hold you're accustomed to with sports betting. Whether you collected cards as a kid and are looking to get back into the hobby, this podcast is for you. If you've been collecting cards for years, this podcast will make you think and operate more efficiently. Are you in real estate? The parallels to investing in sports cards and memorabilia are uncanny. You're on Wall Street? Well, listen close. The best sports cards have outperformed the S&P 500 by 6x since 2013. And during the 2008 market crash, sports cards held up better than the S&P 500. Bet the Board, in conjunction with PWCC, presents Cardboard Chat, an entertaining, sophisticated, and informative podcast that combines sports, analytics, betting, cards, and memorabilia. Without further ado, this is Cardboard Chat with Jesse Craig, a leading figure in the collectible space, and me, Payne. So the first episode, we talked about how we met. We gave the introduction to the podcast and our thoughts about it, but we never actually divulged why the heck we were doing this in the synergy that we both see between sports betting and collectibles.
Yeah, I think that's a really important piece to the whole genesis behind the podcast. I'll kick us off here. So, you know, when I look at the gambling space, and obviously with your audience, we've got a lot of people in here that, you know, they like action. they like to bet on individual games, futures, props, all sorts of things, right? Well, with our space in trading cards and, you know, the modern trading cards for guys that are still actively playing or rookies or even second, third year guys, if you take that research that you put into the gambling space and you apply that to trading cards, there's an argument to be made that there is more upside and less downside than there actually is in gambling. So there's a lot of similarities when you really, really break it down. And it actually, you can limit your risk by putting some of those funds, I believe, into trading cards or diversifying, right? So, I mean, the beauty of trading cards is that if you don't win, if you're wrong, you can still liquidate that asset because you get something tangible, you get something physical, and there's still an inherent value to that. Unfortunately, in sports gambling and sports betting, that money's gone if you're not right. You have zero left. So with trading cards, you have the opportunity to look at a situation and bet on it, and then you can assess after the fact. It's not a end all be all, which I love.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think just to expound on that a little bit, because we do our research in the off season. We're digging into new players that are being added to the team, schedule, which is vital when you're assessing the prospects of a team for the upcoming year. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is with the futures market, there's typically a massive hold. So the guy who's in Buffalo that's traveling to Vegas for the summer, just trying to have a fun weekend, will stumble in the sports book. He'll plop $100 down on the game and or on the Bills to win the Super Bowl at 6-1 without a realization that that market comes with a 28-40% hold based on pricing of every NFL team. And that's what's interesting. And the same thing for professional bettors. Yes, we will dabble in those markets occasionally when we think something's just mispriced, but we try to stay away from futures markets because of that hold. We want yes, no. We want a team to win, right? It's either win or lose. And those markets are priced a little bit more fairly. But the interesting element here is with sports cards, if you wanted to bet, and this is just the example, you wanted to bet on the Buffalo Bills to win the Super Bowl. Well, you could have went and purchased a Josh Allen card. And there is no limit to that. You could have purchased multiple Josh Allen cards. You could have gotten hundreds of thousands of dollars into this market if you truly wanted to, as opposed to the limits that sportsbooks would have taken. The other thing here is you're entering without the hold, which I mentioned, but you don't actually have to win that bet to cash in on the card. Because if the Buffalo Bills make a run, you can sell that card at a fair market price week one of the playoffs, week two of the playoffs, where hype is built into the card to where it's almost being priced as if the Buffalo Bills have won the Super Bowl. And that's something different because in the betting space, you either have to have the Bills win the Super Bowl in this scenario and cash your ticket. You have to come up with new funds to potentially hedge. And that's something we don't necessarily love doing, right? Making a bad bet to hedge a good bet typically lessens your positive expectation.
Sure.
And the other thing that's really interesting here is now sportsbooks have cash out options, which if you don't have the money to hedge would seem like a positive thing to the player. But the reality is they're price gouging you and you're not getting an accurate price of that future. So this is where I think there's a synergy between the two spaces.
Totally. And, you know, there's other strategies you can take too outside of just futures. You know, our market is fairly cyclical, right? So, you know, those that dabble in our space frequently know that you can buy cards in certain points of the off season, typically for, you know, 75, 80 cents on the dollar, just because the attention and the focus isn't on that sport or that athlete at that time. So, you know, another strategy to limit risk, you mentioned, you know, not needing Josh Allen to win that Super Bowl and that you could actually sell that thing when he got into the playoffs because some of that championship is potentially baked in and the hype is there. Well, if you really want to limit risk, but you like to buy in the off season and sell in the preseason, you know, sell before the risk. You know, a lot of guys who sold Trey Lance in the preseason made out like bandits because the hype was there. He was going to be the starting quarterback of the 49ers, but there's a lot of question marks. So it's a high risk, high reward. You know, if he comes out and he kills it, well, obviously there, you know, you're going to make a really nice profit. But I think some of that success in the preseason because of hype is kind of baked in already. So, you know, there's different ways to slice it. You could take a look at a guy who has a really weak schedule coming up, whether it's NFL, NBA, buy him now, anticipating him to perform really, really well, and there'd be a lot more hype around his cards over the next, you know, call it 4 to 6 weeks. And you could be, you know, you could have a liquidation point in mind. You know, you're using strategy, you're using your own nature of a scout, you know, to make these determinations, but there's just so many different ways that you can slice it. And that's why I love trading cards. There's a lot of different ways to, you know, be active in the space, buying and selling when you're looking at, you know, futures or even just that individual season.
I think your initial point there is extremely savvy, and that's what a lot of the best in the market do. They're purchasing football when it's out of sight, out of mind. And the other interesting element there is selling it before the season starts, specifically in football, because we know it's an attrition sport. Now, I know the league has changed some rules to protect quarterbacks because they understand the quarterbacks are their moneymaker, but it is still a violent sport where these guys go down frequently. And you patted yourself on the back there, and not many know it, because you were a purchaser of a fairly large Trey Lance card and dumped it before the start of the season.
It was an easy one to use as an example. I did very well on a Trey Lance card that I bought about a year ago, actually, before he was, you know, when Jimmy was still playing. It was like, you know, early to mid last season. You know, got the card graded, got a PSA 10, and, you know, I just, because of risk, I didn't believe in Trey Lance as a player, even though I'm a 49er fan. I love the 49ers. I don't love Jimmy G either. But that being said, I knew that if I'm going to limit my risk, some other people might believe in Trey Lance. So I'm going to sell that thing in the preseason to take my money off the table to limit my risk. It might have limited my upside, but it also limited my downside drastically. And look what happened, right? So timing, like a lot of things, is everything. And that was the case in this scenario.
What we have learned, especially with this newfound story of Trey Lance and what you did last week in a segment that we call It's Time.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. It's time, folks. That's right. We're going to discuss undervalued and overvalued cards, or maybe even some memorabilia assets, potentially some players. Is it time to buy, sell, or hold on to these assets or players? We'll give you some opinions and back it up.
So you apparently are the quarterback jinx. You bought Trey Lance. He went down with an injury. You were telling us all to sell Tua and the man goes down with an injury. What's going on with you, Jesse?
I understand quarterbacks. What can I say?
You're cloaked, I think, is what's happening here. You just kind of wish some demons upon these quarterbacks and they just go down with injuries. Look, if we can get you to do this before some of these games start on Sunday, I'm going to have to put you on the payroll.
Oh, hey, deal. Look, it's as simple as knowing it is a violent sport, knowing that the chances of a quarterback making it through a season these days, even with the new rules in place, without injury, is, it's probably less than 50%, right? They're going to miss some games. They're going to get banged up. It's a brutal, brutal sport. And if a player hasn't yet proven themselves, if they haven't actually done it, have they won a Super Bowl? Have they won an MVP? Like, is there any accolades associated with that player outside of just the hype? Well, then for me, timing is, 10x more important than it normally is, because you're trying to avoid the scenarios where they get hurt and their cards go down 50% in value.
Makes complete sense. And now that it's this time of the week and we're into the buy, sell, hold feature, where we discuss some undervalued players, cards specifically, we're going to be a little bit more cheerful this week. There aren't any sells, but the first card that we are going to discuss is one that you've picked out. So I will let you lead the way. What is your undervalued buy card right now, Jesse?
So for those who aren't in our space but have seen some big headlines lately, there was a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle SGC 9.5 that sold an auction about a month and a half ago for $12.6 million. It's the most expensive trading card to ever sell. So my card that I'm selecting is not the 52 Topps Mickey Mantle. It's actually the 1952 Topps Willie Mays. And I'm going to give a little bit of background on the 52 Topps cards for those that don't know that issue and why it's very important, why the Mantle is worth what it is. So 1952 Topps is the first production that Topps ever made. They had the licensing for the MLB for 70 years. It just got taken over by Fanatics recently, but it was the very first year that Topps ever produced a card. It's an iconic brand in baseball. So first year they ever made it, they ran the first production up to cards numbered to 310, right? Now, Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays' rookie is actually 1951, and their main rookie card is a 1951 Bowman. So this is a second-year card, but it's a first-year Topps production, and it's a critically important card because of Topps. Additionally, the cards sold amazing when they released them in the spring of 1952, but they only printed part of the print run for that initial release, up to card number 310. Well, what happened to be card number 311? Mickey Mantle. So because the cards did so well, they ran the next production and they released them towards the end of the summer. Well, with school starting up and people being busy, getting ready for all that, it flopped, did not do well. So these cards actually, a lot of them ended up in the ocean. They just dumped them. They weren't selling well. They needed to get rid of them. And at that time, I guess you just throw stuff in the ocean. So that's where they went. And so we've got this issue where now these cards numbered 311 and up, there's less supply, right? So they're called high numbers. And the Mickey Mantle card, Mickey being Mickey, right? Top 20 player all time. You can maybe argue top 10, 7 World Series. His numbers are great. He's an iconic brand for the Yankees franchise. And so it's an extremely important issue, and that's why this card is worth so much money. It's also a beautiful card. It's vertical. It looks like a painting. Absolutely love the card. So the 52 Willie Mays is card number 261. So this was not a high number. This is actually just a normal, part of the normal production. When you break this down and you look at the delta between what the Mantle is selling for and the Mays is selling for, the delta on the Mantle and Mays it's literally in the 8x range. I mean, it's astronomical how much more a 52 Topps Mantle goes for than a 52 Topps Mays. And if you look at the year before, their rookie cards in 1951 Bowman, Mantle, and Mays, there's actually only about a 2x delta between those two cards. Now, I understand you can point to the fact that these cards are high numbered, there's less supply. Well, the supply variance isn't as high as you actually think it would be. So looked at PSA's pop report. In the history of PSA, they've graded about 2,700 Mays cards in 1952 Topps Mays cards. And they've graded about 1,850 52 Topps Mickey Mantle cards. So the delta isn't even 2x on the quantity that was graded, yet the delta between pricing is about 8x. So I see a huge gap in those two cards versus when you look at their 51 Bowman rookies. And with the monster sale that we just had recently of the SGC 9.5 52 Topps Mantle for $12.6 million, I think Mantles are going to be going crazy. Mays are going to get left behind a little bit, but that gap will close. That card is extremely undervalued, and that's why that's my card for today.
I couldn't agree more, and I think you hit that perfectly in that between PSA and SGC, there's about 3,500 total graded copies. And you start getting into even the near mint or better condition, and there's like slightly more than 100 copies. And I just kind of liken this to a lot of our listeners, whether they're in real estate or they're in the stock market. Imagine if you were told there's only like 150 of this specific style home in the entire country, or you're in the stock market and there's only 3,500 shares of this particular blue chip stock. And that's how you should be thinking about some of these assets. But you get into Willie Mays specifically, right? He's not going to get injured rounding third base anymore. He's not going to have an insensitive social media post that gets dug up from a troll years later. The legacy is etched in stone and nothing's going to change that. And you look at what he did on the field, just one of four players to hit, have 3,000 hits and 600 home runs. And of those four players, Mays is the best defensive player of those four in terms of war. But to your point, this set is historic. It's iconic. It's special. There's so much behind it. So if you're a listener that's not familiar, search the 1952 top set online and you're going to find a lot of interesting things over what's transpired. The interesting thing here is dumping those cards in the ocean has certainly helped keep supply down, which is better for some of us 70 years later with collectors and investors alike. So that's the interesting element to this card that I think the set is just so iconic.
It is. And the last thing to mention, too, is, you know, Mantle has been dead for some time. You know, Mays is still alive. And so there's also going to be, you know, we talk about awareness and how that can drive value because, you know, something happens where everyone's, you know, becomes aware of that athlete again or that person. And when he passes, he's 91 years old. It's going to happen, you know, in the short term. You know, I expect to see a spike in his cards then as well.
Completely agree. I am going to go in a different direction in terms of sports, and it's Peyton Manning. What do you feel about that? Because I texted you, I was going to have Peyton Manning as my undervalued football player, and I got like a response that was the equivalent of, wow, that's shocking.
I don't know. I think you might have misinterpreted a text message there, Mr. Payne. Okay. But no, I like Peyton Manning as being an undervalued player. You know, you look at a guy who's got, what, two Super Bowls, right, with two different franchises. He's one of the most accomplished college football players of all time. I mean, the guy was an absolute stud at Tennessee. He's got, what, seven first-team All-Pros. Brady only has three. He's a five-time MVP. Brady only has three. He has a phenomenal brand. He's, even though he's not playing, he's still relevant, right? So he's got his Monday night show with his brother Eli that's been kicking off. And, you know, we've talked about brand before, and I'll continue to hammer it home every time we talk, but it's so critical for a player being relevant and them having a great brand to believe in their assets long term, in my opinion. You know, you could use another athlete from like basketball. I always use him as an example because his cards should be worth way more than they are. But you look at like Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard's cards are worth a fraction of what they should be because he's boring as hell. That's really what it is. He is just a boring individual. He's a hell of a basketball player, but he is just not exciting. And that affects his brand. Nobody wants to buy his stuff because they're not in love with Kawhi Leonard. And he's bounced around a bit, maybe been a little bit, you know, disloyal. But you know, you look at a guy like you look at a guy like Manning, and my God, I mean, you know, I love hearing stories about Peyton Manning too. You hear about all these handwritten letters that he sends to people. I mean, that's old school, and I love it. And it's almost one of my goals to get a handwritten letter from Peyton Manning at some point.
That would be awesome. I think what's interesting about this, right, and we do this segment, the word undervalue gets thrown around a bit too much in the collectible space because it's people's marketing pitch when they go to sell an asset.
Trading cards and memorabilia have seen incredible growth as an alternative investment. The company leading the growth? PWCC Marketplace. PWCC Marketplace runs the largest weekly auction of authenticated sports cards, Pokemon cards, comic books, video games, and memorabilia in the world. PWCC Marketplace also has more than 65,000 items listed in their fixed price marketplace that you can make an offer on right now. Head over to pwccmarketplace.com and see why they're the best option for buying and selling trading cards, memorabilia, and all of your collectibles.
But I wholeheartedly believe Peyton Manning is one of the most undervalued brands, not just in football, but in the entire sports market. And you mentioned it. He led two different organizations to Super Bowl titles. At the time Manning retired, he held multiple NFL passing records. And that stuff seems pretty obvious, but this, you mentioned brand, and we talked about it a little bit on the first episode last week. And sometimes when you're not playing, you're no longer in the spotlight, you're out of sight, out of mind. But he is keeping himself relevant with the Monday Night Football, as you mentioned, and that dynamic between him and Eli is hilarious, and it feels like it's putting him in front of a little bit younger demographic. But you mentioned basketball. And that's interesting because that's where my mind kind of takes me now. And it's an element that nobody's talking about. I kind of liken Peyton Manning to Steph Curry in the sense that Curry's shooting ability changed the way the NBA game is played. Obviously, analytics played a role in all the three-point shooting as well. But for Peyton Manning, he's synonymous with the audible, right? Altering plays at the line of scrimmage, being one of the first and most notable quarterbacks to effectively change and call plays on the field based upon the looks he's giving, right? He's you know, an on-field coach at that time. Yeah. And you...
Omaha!
Yeah. Thank you. I was just about to say that. If you asked a casual fan, hey, what's the association if I said Peyton Manning, that's the exact response. Omaha, Omaha. And... Yep. I think when you think about some of the quarterbacks in the pantheon of those quarterbacks in this collectible space, Tom Brady's market cap is 20x Peyton Manning's. We get Brady's to go. But you mentioned, right, Manning has more MVPs, more first-time All-Pro honors. If the market cap gap shrinks just a little bit, and I think it should as collectors get a little bit more informed, right, just the evolution of any space, yep. Manning prices will and should increase over time.
I agree, and this isn't to downplay Tom Brady at all. He's the GOAT. He's got seven Super Bowls, and it doesn't matter how you get it done. You got it done, right? But in football specifically, and you know, with all the deep dives that you do, Payne, you'll you know, attest to this, but it is such a team sport, and these quarterbacks really get to, you know, they get to be what's the word I'm looking for here? The jockey behind the horse. And yep. So they get a lot of the accolades, they get a lot of the attention. And let's be honest, you know, Brady's breaking records because he's been playing so damn long. You know, he didn't throw the football a ton in New England for, you know, outside of, you know, the years with Randy Moss. They ran the ball a lot. And, you know, they just knew how to win football games. And so you look at a guy, I think a guy like Peyton Manning probably did more with less than Tom Brady did, just to be frank. But yeah. He still got seven Super Bowls. So that kind of squashes a lot of the argument.
And won a couple of the head-to-head battles. So you are correct. Tom Brady remains the GOAT. But again, when you look at that market cap of being 20x, if we just get a little bit more sophisticated and understand Peyton Manning's accomplishments, see, if he closes that gap just a little bit, you're going to see a 2-3x in pricing when you zoom out long term. In terms of numbers and pricing, we are looking for a magic number.
Pick a number, any number, whatever it may be. We got a number inside, but we want a magic number. All right, this is where we're going to pick a few big cards that enter in an auction over the next couple of days, and we're going to try and guess how much they sell for in advance. Throw out a number. We got one too.
So this segment got real competitive last week, Jesse, so we had to bring it back. We have three more cards this week, which I will introduce. They are at auction at PWCC. When this goes live, you'll be able to track and monitor which one of us was closer. Obviously, Jesse is well more informed than me. He should win every single one of these.
Oh, here
that's
we
the
go.
That's the pressure you're under here, my man.
Great. I love you. Sandbagging early. Go for it.
The first card we're going to talk about is the 1951 Bowman Willie Mays rookie in PSA 5. Excellent condition. Less than 300 examples in this grade. Now, before we get to the prediction of the hammer price, I mentioned evolution in this market. It's a thing. And obviously, Brent and PWCC were at the forefront of this. We understand in 2022 that eye appeal matters. This particular copy I own myself in the same grade with the same off-centering. That can impact pricing in general, right? Where do you think this card ends up?
You know, this is a card that we've actually already mentioned, you know, before in this pod, because we're comparing it to the 52 Topps Maze. But, you know, this card itself is a little off-centered, but I'm really surprised that these haven't picked up more steam yet. And I think that, you know, with, you know, some record pricing that we're getting from the Mantle cards, like I mentioned, I think these will get an uptick. But, you know, based on looking at this card, and you mentioned eye appeal, it really matters. It really can drive the value of an asset. You know, we have a sticker program where we actually call out how nice we think the eye appeal is. And that means you're just looking at the card and, you know, is the image, is the border centered, because based on how they were manufactured and cut, it can be kind of off center. It can be shifted one side or the other. You know, maybe a card looks better for its respective grade because, you know, there's a human element to grading. So this is probably an average copy. And my number on this card is $14,200.
Sheesh. So I purchased this card at a local show in 2016 for $3,800 cash. My nice. Copy looks identical. And this isn't to be that kind of guy and Price is Right you. I could screenshot you my number right now in my notes. I'm actually at 14-1. So I think we view this card virtually the same. Your hope yep. is that it sells for 14-3. My hope is that it sells for 13-9 or 1400. But I think we're in the same ballpark. And I think it is a little bit easier to price some vintage cards, especially with the eye appeal. And it wasn't to knock the card at all, because I think it's a great card. It's an asset everybody should own, especially that 1951 Bowman set, as you alluded to, is wildly underpriced. And these ones are the rookie cards in my mind of Mantle and Maze. But aside from that, like, this was a card that was printed off-center. It's not uncommon. You actually see a massive uptick in price based upon centering. So this is, to your point, I think a standard copy. So I'm at 14-1 here.
That's
where I'm at. Now, the next card is wildly different. We talked about this set on the first show. It's the 2017 National Treasures Deshaun Watson rookie RPA out of 99 copies in BGS 9.5 gem mint grade. Three color patch, red, blue, white. And I have to ask before I put in my guess. So I just want to gather all of the information. Mm-hmm. The white part of this patch, do we believe that's part of a massage towel? And if it is, do you know if there's any remnants on that part of the patch? Because that will impact value here, I believe.
I mean, look, I selected this card on purpose, right? Because of comments like that. But no, this is an interesting card because I think that, you know, unlike the 51 Bowman Maze, where pretty sure we can, you know, predict the value of that card within about 10% because there's so much sales data and history on it. This card is much different. You know, he hasn't played yet this year. The Browns are okay. And you know, we know he's coming back in what, week 12, is it? Is that right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So this is a futures bet, basically. This is a future player bet. You're buying this now thinking he's going to crush it for the Browns when he comes back. It's a very interesting card. It's a beautiful copy. It really is. BGS 9.5 out of 99. And I've got,
let me interrupt you. You're also buying a little bit of Jacoby Brissett here, because he's got to keep it afloat to where when Deshaun gets back, they're still in the playoff hunt.
I'd say you're buying their running game more than anything short.
Yes, no doubt about it. Especially this week.
Right, exactly. So for me, you know, it's an interesting card. Is there some remnants on that piece of white cloth that is TBD? What would be interesting is if his massage towels actually had a logo on them and you get some trading cards produced with some massage used towels. All right. Well, I think we're beating a dead horse at this point, but I'm going to go $12,700 on this card.
Okay, so I did a little research. A PSA 10 three-color patch sold for $36,000 back in July. He was suspended for 11 games in August, and more of what transpired came to light. This is a non-true Gen Mint copy. I'm going to go a touch higher, but I'm starting to be hesitant about it. I was at 14.4 here, but I think you're probably better versed in this. This is one of those complete guessing games. The range is substantially larger for a card like this because there's not as much stability and there's not as much data points as you've alluded to. But I think we're probably in the same ballpark. I'm going to say 14-4 here.
Yeah, this is a card that could sell for 10,000 or 16,000. There's a pretty wide range, honestly, and it kind of depends if somebody wants to play that futures game with with the Browns.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next card is interesting. These are the kinds of cards that I enjoy, and I'm happy that you included this one. It's a 1997 Precious Metal Gems PMG Green Steve Young out of 15 copies. It's a BGS 7.5. Now, the grades on these cards are not as important as others due to both the limited supply and the production of the card. This is very much the first of its kind. It has that crossover basketball following because that was the introduction to these cards. The Michael Jordan, the Kobe Bryant, they sell for millions and millions of dollars. So just kind of putting that in your mindset here. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
You go first on this one.
Okay. So when you sent me this card, I very much felt good about it, right? I'm a vintage Jeter 90s insert guy. That's about the trio that I collect in addition to some game use stuff. And it actually wasn't until the summer of 2019 when our mutual friend Grant introduced me to PMGs and rubies and credentials, and I just went nuts. I haven't stopped. I can't get enough of this stuff. So the last time this PMG Green Steve Young sold was in September 2019 for $3,600. You may know somebody important at PWCC, Jesse, but value-wise, this should be in the premier auction because I think it goes for 22.8.
Oh, baby. Your number is definitely higher than mine. Now, the reason that I'm not as bullish on this card. Now, look, these cards are beautiful. They're super important to the 90s inserts, you know, the late 90s inserts that really, really shaped the way that our market manufactures cards today. And, you know, if you look at the basketball variation of this card, the 97 PMG Green, this is the card that we sold privately of Kobe Bryant for $2 million. And, you know, there's only 10 that exist in basketball. There's 15 in football, but it's known that, you know, when a Jordan sells, it's going to sell for over $4 million. So use that in context when you're looking at, you know, a stud like Steve Young, who, you know, obviously I'm a Niner fan, but doesn't get enough credit. That might be by a statement, but he doesn't get enough credit for what he did. He's the greatest left-handed quarterback of all time. He is, and look, that's a position that's always, you know, there's no real big names outside of Steve Young that have done a whole lot in the NFL that are left-handed. I absolutely love this card. I love Steve Young. I'm a Niner fan, but I'm actually less than you on this card. It's an important
You're
card
still
for football.
Taking shots at Tua, by the way.
I mean, yeah, maybe subconsciously. Tua's got a little bit to prove here. I don't want to talk Steve Young and Tua in the same context yet. Let's hold off a little bit on that. So great. I've got this card lower than you. I had it even lower than I'm going to say. I did some more late deep dive research last night, and I've got this card at 15,350.
Okay. I figured that's where you were going to go because there are some programs out there where you can estimate the value, and the estimators are saying 14. I had to send a text message to some of my basketball guys, and they said 22. I just went 22.8. I think with a set like this.
Wait a second. You're crowdsourcing right now? What's going on here?
I told you. I know the GOAT of the PMGs. Like, this is the guy. I had to send in a feeler. And he said 22. I think what's interesting about this set, because it's so iconic, you're going to have multiple types of buyers. So you're going to have the Jesse Craigs of the world who are Steve Young truthers who love the San Francisco 49ers. And this is the last time they may see this card pop up. They have to have it.
Sure.
And then because the set is so iconic, we've seen people try to put this together specifically on the basketball side, and there are going to be someone that is bidding on this to attempt to finish and complete this set. And so it only takes two to create new record prices.
That's it. It takes two people. And you know what? You might be right. There might be a bidding war, and this thing could go for, you know, 30% higher than I think, but we shall see.
you went a little bit more conservative. But we know the Steve Young card to 15 copies is a ghost. Here's another one.
That's a ghost. We're going to highlight a card that hasn't sold in more than a year right now, or is serial numbered to less than 100 copies produced. We're going to talk about why this card is significant, maybe in terms of hobbies or language or just the overall rarity of it all, and why it's considered a ghost.
We indiscreetly mentioned this card last week when we were talking about the OG quarterbacks cards being contenders. 1998 was the inaugural version. Then in 2000, a sixth round draft pick came around. No one really knew who he was. That guy's Tom Brady. And his playoff contenders rookie card is up for auction. It's out of 100 copies. If you could own one football card and money was no object, this is clearly it. If you're an art collector that likes football and have never thought about purchasing a sports card, this would be the massive addition to your portfolio. So talk to me a little bit about the 2000 Tom Brady playoff contenders rookie card to 100.
Yeah, this is Tom Brady's main chase card. So this card has an on-card auto, numbered out of 100, and they are very condition sensitive. So there are actually zero Beckett 9.5s and zero PSA 10s that exist of this card. I believe there's only one PSA 9 and five or six BGS 9. So the condition nature of this card, for a card printed in the 2000s, it's very sensitive. And it's also known to have streaking on the autograph. So we have a 10 auto grade on this card that's going to auction, whereas a lot of these could easily be 9s or even 8s with some of the streaking that you see with the pen that he used on these things. It's his best card. I mean, let's call it what it is. It's his best card. This is the highest grade example to auction. One of these sold about a year and a half ago at $3.1 million. But you know, we've only seen four BGS 9s hit the auction block the past 14 years. So it's not a, you know, like I said, there's only five or six examples of this thing in a BGS 9. So you don't see this thing sell very often. When it did sell a year and a half ago, it sold for $3.1 million. So this is a big boy. Big boy. We did sell one privately earlier in this year for about $3.8 million. But, you know, it's interesting with the economic landscape that has changed. There's actually been a lot of lower grade copies that have hit the market because some of these record prices that you got from the higher grades. So supply appears to be more readily available than it really is, and that can affect price short term. But people need to realize we're talking about 100 of these existing on planet Earth. You're talking about the GOAT, who's the greatest football player of all time. You tell me who the hell is ever going to beat seven championships? Who? Nobody. There can't be. I don't think there's an argument to be made that we're even going to have, we can have a GOAT argument in 20 to 30 years. I just don't think it's possible.
I completely agree. And I think when we had that conversation or potentially have that conversation 20 or 30 years from now, there needs to be context because the league will be far more pass happy than in my estimation. That's why some of these records, right, we hear all the time, like this receiver just broke the all-time rookie record for receiving yards the first handful of years. Like, yeah, I mean, they're passing substantially more. I would hope that would be the case. But
Justin Herbert breaking every single first, second, third year passing record because he threw the ball 50 times a game.
Yeah, exactly. And that needs to be the context. But getting back to this card, it's the championship ticket version. So it is serial numbered out of 100. And before you even presented this card, I think this is the best football card on planet Earth. I don't think there's one that's close. And the great part about it is the looks, because it feels like this, you know, 2000. It's this merging of, it's got this classic look, but it has this shiny foil that makes it look absolutely awesome. And the autograph, to your point, is a massive player in this card because there's a lot of them that have streaks. There's just not enough of these to go around. This is one of those things, again, if you are potentially in the market, you're liquid, you never really dabbled into sports cards before, this would be one where you're like, hey, like I have to make a play on this card. But I'm interested to see ultimately where this goes for, because there are a ton of variance factors in determining where this ends. Where, I mean, I know this isn't the game, but where do we think this lands?
That's a really hard question.
It is. It's tough. I shouldn't have asked it, by the way.
No, but this
when Todd
this
puts
is,
me on the spot.
Yeah, no, I hear you. This is one of those cards where you hope that there's two guys that really want it and they go after it, because it is a card that should be worth, in my opinion, $5 million plus. It's not going to go for $5 million, but it should be. I mean, outside of if Tom Brady had some kind of, you know, Logo Man or NFL Shield card, which those are like the staple for rookies on productions that are 2003 and older. If you have a rookie Logo Man card, it's the chase card for that player. So, for example, there's a horizontal version of a Logo Man autograph for LeBron James. If that card sold today, it's in a PSA 9 holder, it would probably go for $15
million. Yeah.
If Tom Brady had a NFL Shield, which is equivalent to the Logo Man, I mean, that card's a $25 million card. So when you talk about it, yes, there's 100 examples, but this card is very nice for the card being a BGS 9. So it should be worth that. Now, I'll close this out with a little fun fact. This card sold for $11,000 in 2015.
I'm kicking myself.
You want to talk about people waking up a little bit? Well, yeah, they're awake.
Yeah, that is one. And there's an interesting backstory to this, because I know the guy that sold one privately a year prior for $3,800. And the guy who purchased it was a pig in plop. And he sold it, I believe, in 16 or 17 for $40,000. And neither of those gentlemen are quite happy right now.
But at the time, they both probably thought they crushed it. So everything's all relative. You can't look back.
Yes, unless you have an idea of markets and where you think spaces are going. And speaking of markets, we're going to get into another segment called This or That.
So we doing this or we doing that? You tell me and we'll tell you. We're going to compare two cards right now of similar value that are completely different. Let me give you an example. Let's just say, for argument's sake, you have a vintage Mickey Mantle baseball card worth $30,000. But you also have a modern day Joe Burrow rookie card worth $30,000. Which one would you rather have and why? You tell us. We're going to tell you right now.
What you did this week is going to make this or that extremely difficult to gauge. And we're going to compare two cards that I would call modern. I think that's probably the appropriate verbiage for that. They're both from the same year, 1996. They're both from inaugural releases. One is a football card. One is a basketball card. The football card is the 1996 Bowman's Best Atomic Refractor Ray Lewis rookie in PSA 10. There's roughly 20 of those in that grade. The other is a basketball card. The answer, 1996 Topps Chrome Refractor Allen Iverson rookie in a BGS 9.5. That's a Pop 22. Jesse, I'm going to let you lead the way here.
All right, appreciate it. So look, this week's a little bit more difficult on purpose. I thought we had a little bit of a cupcake, this or that last week, picking the GOAT of a sport, albeit hockey, versus somebody who, you know, has only won one Super Bowl and one MVP and is still young. So when I look at these two cards, I wanted to pick one from the same year, same rookie year. So I thought it would be a more difficult decision, and I didn't pick, you know, a GOAT or anybody like that. It was, you know, kind of guys that are, you know, sure ballot, you know, they're Hall of Famers, but they're both loved by their respective fans. So you got a guy like Ray Lewis, maybe allegedly stabbed somebody. We'll leave that at that.
Listen, if I'm picking a middle linebacker for my team, I want somebody who's willing just to go out there and shank a mofo.
Facts. Exactly. And I think that's why, you know, he's one of the most intense football players I've ever seen. The guy's energy is absolutely off the charts. And he almost has a cult-like following for those that are either Ravens fans or that just love, you know, stud defensive players. So, you know, this card... This card is, you know, from the 90s, is when a lot of the trading card market has been reshaped and has changed. And some of these inserts really kicked it off. And so the phrase atomic refractor is a critical insert and parallel from the from the 90s. And that's what this is. And it's his rookie in a PSA 10. Like you mentioned, there's only about 20 copies that exist in a PSA 10. You know, the last sale on this card was about $6,900 that closed on Sunday this last week. And, you know, we've got a guy that's a two-time Super Bowl champ, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, 13-time Pro Bowler. So accolades galore. Now, transitioning to the Allen Iverson, it's kind of similar, right, where beloved by his fans, almost a cult-like following. You know, based on when he played, you can make the argument that he is the best pound-for-pound basketball player to ever play the game. You know, he's additionally a four-time scoring champion, 11-time All-Star, one of the most beloved point guards of all time. You know, he won the MVP in 2001. And this specific card, too, this Topps Chrome Refractor, is synonymously known as one of the most important cards from 1996 because it's also the commodity for Kobe Bryant's rookie. So it's a very, very popular card. It's a really pretty card. It refracts. It's very, you know, nicely centered. And finding these in gem mint copy can be difficult because there's greening, there's centering issues, there's surface issues. So, you know, the last sale of this card was for $6,600 this past weekend. So that's very similarly priced. Both beloved players, both have, you know, incredible resumes, and this is it's a tough decision.
Extremely difficult. So here's what I will say. Obviously, both of these are historic sets, and first-year products will carry a premium. For full disclosure, I own the Ray Lewis card, so I don't want to pick that one.
I did not know that before picking this.
We're not here, obviously. You know, this is, you could correlate it to investment advice. We're not trying to pump the market on our own cards here, so I just want to fully disclose that in advance. But even though I own this card, I'm actually going to go with the Topps Chrome Refractor Allen Iverson rookie. Topps Chrome is the bigger brand. It's also a first-year product. Iverson will always have to sell for a certain percentage of Kobe. And as Kobe increases, Iverson will have to fall in line to an extent. And I think we're starting to hear some of the stories. And I don't disagree. I think he's probably the best pound-for-pound basketball player of all time. But when you now look at what transpired and you hear all the stories, could you imagine if he wasn't in a nightclub or at a strip club five nights a week? I mean, the stories out of Philadelphia from my guys are unbelievable in that he could be out till 5:30 in the morning and somehow purge himself the following morning and drop 40 that night.
Sometimes you got to make it amazing. Sometimes you got to make it rain, man. Sometimes you just got to make it rain. Look, I know you're going Iverson. I'm going to go the other way. I'm actually going to go Ray Lewis. And my thought process behind this is that While I agree with you that Iversons have to stay a certain percentage less than Kobe and kind of follow that trend, I think that there's going to be a reckoning in our market for football cards where, you know, right now, as you know, Payne, these cards that are non-quarterbacks are not getting the love they deserve. They're such critical players to the success of a team, and there are not defensive players that get any love, and that has to change over time. So from a pure upside potential, I'm going to go with Ray Lewis as going down as one of the greatest linebackers of all time. And I think that from, you know, when you talk ROI, that this card's got more upside.
That's interesting. I hope you're right, obviously, as an owner of this card. And that was my thought process. And you almost have to go back in time because football's changed, as crazy as it sounds, so much since Ray Lewis played. And the Super Bowls you mentioned, no one's giving credit to those victories to the offense of the Baltimore Ravens or the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. Ray Lewis was the leader of that team. He was the face of those teams. And I think that's something that's really important to think about, because in football, we're always worried about the quarterback. And to an extent, especially this day and age with all the passing, that's probably true, right? I mean, wide receivers aren't getting a lot of love, but you can go from team to team to team and produce. You aren't expected to win a Super Bowl ring. So I'm happy you went this route for my portfolio. And it's a fantastic card. If you've ever held this in hand and just kind of moved it around, you're like, oh my God, this card is absolutely ridiculous. But I'm still going with the Allen Iverson, specifically if there's no greening on that copy.
100%. The greening can be an issue big time.
All right. This was the second episode. How do you feel about it? Your sea legs are under you now. You feel a little more comfortable. You came out of your shell.
We're talking cards, man. It doesn't get much better than that.
Absolutely love it. I'm looking forward to next week when we talk. And again, all of these episodes will release on Tuesdays. They might not be every week, but when they do release, they'll be Tuesdays.
Make sure you follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. Subscribe to Bet the Board and get notified when new episodes of Cardboard Chat air on Tuesdays. And be sure to stop by pwccmarketplace.com for all your collecting needs.